Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
It's the Chronicles of Aguna, and we are live.
You're listening to the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast.
I'm Martin Tyler, and you're listening to Harry Simeon.
It's the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast, brought to you by the 90 Min Podcast Network. As ever, I'm your host, Harry Simeon, and I'm joined by a very, very special guest today. It's been a while since we've been on a show together. It's been a while since we've clashed horns about Arsenal and Chelsea, but I'm delighted to welcome back to the show the brilliant Rory Jennings. How you doing, mate? It's been a while.
It's been far too long, Harry. It's an honour to be on. Thank you so much.
Pleasure to have you, mate. Pleasure to have you. And what better time to do it than, of course, with Arsenal travelling to Stamford Bridge on Wednesday night to take on a bloody informed Chelsea side. I've got to be honest, Rory, I'm dreading it. Let's talk a little bit about Chelsea, because I know you in particular were quite disappointed by the way that Frank Lampard was sort of dismissed of his role. But it's worked out well, hasn't it, so far?
Yeah, look, it's Harry, it certainly worked out well if that was the intention. Like, my issue with Lampard is that when he was employed, it was to change the entire ethos of the club. It was to get rid of the hiring and firing. It was to become a club with more of an entrenched soul. You know, last year with Lampard, you know, we were beating Ajax and we were singing Tomori at the back, Tammy in attack, Chelsea going to win the Champions League, all under super Frankie Lampard. That was the song. To hell with that. You know what I mean? That's kind of the approach of the club. The club have gone, to hell with that. The project, Tomori at the back, Tammy in attack, Lampard's going to win us the Champions League. Because of that wasn't an immediate thing. We were singing it as an immediate thing, but I think even the most optimistic of Chelsea fans, like myself, would have said, this is a project. This is going to take time. The Chelsea board, it looked like they were going to give Lampard time. They brought him in. They made all the right noises. And then the second that he hit a blip, they got rid. I have to analyse the Tuchel thing totally separately of Lampard. I'm upset with what happened to Lampard. I'm very upset with what happened to Lampard. I think it was the wrong decision. I think that Lampard was going to get it right. Separate conversation altogether. Thomas Tuchel is amazing. He is an amazing manager, and we're very lucky to have him. And he has done things I didn't think were possible with this squad. So, yeah, it's been good.
Yeah, for a Chelsea fan, it's been brilliant. And even me, like, I find myself intrigued by watching Chelsea at the moment, because I've really sort of enjoyed watching Thomas Tuchel's system and watching how quickly, actually, he's managed to get all of those guys on board. He seems to rotate to a point where he still keeps people happy, but still doesn't really weaken the side. I think he's got the balance absolutely spot on. And what Thomas Tuchel has got that I probably didn't think he had was that charisma, you know, that personality. When he talks to the media, I find him quite interesting and you want to hear more. Were you surprised by that side of Tuchel as well?
Yeah, look, when he landed at Chelsea, there was a school of thought that because I was backing Lampard so passionately that I was anti-Tuchel. That was never the case. I was incredibly supportive of Lampard, but I blame the board for the decision. I don't blame Thomas Tuchel. Thomas Tuchel made all the right noises from the second he arrived at the club. He contacted Frank Lampard. They had arranged to have a drink post-COVID. Thomas Tuchel has done nothing but cover himself in glory. He's approached the club in the right way. He has entrenched himself in the Chelsea legacy. You know, he understands the club. He knows who Peter Osgood is. He's made sure that he has referenced certain things that mean a lot to people like me who go to Chelsea. So I think that Thomas Tuchel had been a revelation. And there is no doubt in my mind that Thomas Tuchel is obviously a better manager than Frank Lampard today. But the point was tomorrow, whereas the club kind of said, forget about tomorrow, today is the priority. So, yeah, it's been... But, I mean, even if we sort of just take Lampard out of the whole equation, I think that you can make a case for Thomas Tuchel being manager of the year. And the fact that he's only been at the club for 6 months tells you quite how good a job he's done.
Looking at the whole sort of Chelsea model, right? And I want to approach this from an Arsenal perspective, because for us, we have grown increasingly frustrated over the years with an ownership that quite simply do not care about the sporting side of the club. All they are interested in is the dollars. That's why you may see them invest this summer, because for the first time in a quarter of a century, Arsenal are unlikely to be in Europe. That's absolutely crazy when you think about that. But we would swap that for an owner like Abramovich, who does think about today and maybe doesn't always worry about tomorrow. As being someone on the other side of the fence, can you understand why Arsenal fans probably want that?
I would say to you, I would also caveat this by saying, people will say to you in the comments, I imagine they're doing it right now, Rory doesn't speak for Chelsea fans. And I hold my hands up, that is totally true. I don't. I speak purely my opinion. But my opinion on this, which is a minority of Chelsea fans, but my opinion on this is, Harry, mate, be careful what you wish for. Be very careful what you wish for. Roman Abramovich puts his hand in his pocket. Totally agreed. But I think there is a lot more to an owner than simply being prepared to throw the thing that you have an unlimited amount of. So the one thing that Roman Abramovich has is money. So congratulating him and celebrating him for spending money. He literally can't spend his money, right? There isn't enough. He can't spend it. So throwing it at Chelsea, great. And you know, it's generous. And I'm not being flippant about that, but it's the thing that he has at his disposal. But the way that he has approached the club, the integrity of the club. Look, I'm not going to go into this. This is what we're not going to do on this video, 100%, is talk about politics, right? But there is a climate in the world today where Roman Abramovich is involved. Do you know what I mean? Like, there are things happening today where Roman Abramovich is involved, and that doesn't fill me with joy. Far from it, in fact. That's the most mild way I could put it. Similarly, keeping it on football, Harry, he tried to drag us away from Stamford Bridge. He tried to drag us into the Super League. And Chelsea fans will contest what I'm saying. They'll say it wasn't him, it was the board, because they want to back Abramovich. Because Abramovich spends money and they can't get their head around the fact that it's ungrateful. Or I don't know if it's like a status thing. Someone spends money, therefore you have to be grateful. I'm not. I'm genuinely not. I think the way he tried to drag us away from Stamford Bridge is a disgrace. The way he sacked the man who captained us to European glory is a disgrace. And the way he tried to drag us into the Super League is a disgrace. So be careful what you wish for, my friend.
Talking about the European Super League, right? Because it was the Chelsea fans who first went out there and made a big noise about it. And there was a huge protest that followed at the Emirates a few days later, which was fantastic as well. I know you were down there, Rory. What was it like, mate? Because there was a genuine anger, wasn't there? I know from the Arsenal one, it wasn't about clubs anymore. Tribalism had gone out the window just for that particular moment, because it was all about the game and the sport and the footballing pyramid. What were the scenes like at Chelsea? And I saw Petr Cech come out as well. What was that all about?
Yeah, that wasn't my finest moment, in fairness. but the atmosphere and the moment of the Super League debate, it was actually an amazing thing, because I'd done a video, I think, on the build-up to that, to Chelsea playing, where I'd said that it will happen. I thought the Super League would happen, and the reason I thought that is because history has taught us that billionaires get what they want as individuals. So 12 billionaires, they're gonna get what they want. And I think it was on the kickoff, I kind of said, look, this is inevitable now. It's a sad state of affairs, but this will happen. That was on the Monday. I think we went down there on either the Tuesday or the Wednesday. It might have been the Tuesday, actually. We were playing Brighton at home. And I'd acquiesced to the fact that this was going to happen. But that day, my WhatsApp group, my Chelsea mates WhatsApp group was popping. Everyone's organising, going. And I was so dejected. I was so depressed. But I just thought, do you know what? I'm going to have to go. I'm going to have to just see what's happening. I had no idea, firstly, that there would be so many people. I thought it was going to be a couple of dozen. I really did. I thought it'd be a couple of dozen. I reckon in the end, it was probably like 2,000 or 3,000 there. It was like an away end. I'd say it was the same amount as an away end, an average away end.
Yeah.
Which is huge, because the difference with Chelsea are very fortunate in the positioning of our ground. Unlike Arsenal, unlike Man United, your ground, for example, is on a forecourt. It's on a island. So it's
on like a platform, yeah.
It's on a platform. So you can contain it. Right, you had so many fans at your protest by the time it came around, so you couldn't. But if it was what we had, which was spur of the moment, 24 hours later, it would have been able to be contained at any other ground. But because of Chelsea, it's literally on the Fulham Road. We made such a. It's never the intention to ruin people's day. People need to get home from work, but we shut the Fulham Road effectively. Sat down on a street. The buses couldn't move. The taxis couldn't move. The cars. The people trying to get home from school. It was disruptive. And that was the point. It meant that people had to listen. And one of the people who couldn't get to work was Petr Cech. So he's come walking along. And when I say he couldn't get to work, I assume he would naturally drive, right? Yeah. Or get dropped off. He came walking into the ground and was furious, livid, and combative. He wasn't kind of angry and going about his business or keeping his head down. He was directly angry and making his feelings known at anybody that would listen. As he walked in, I think people were trying to have the conversation with him, but he just so furious, he just stormed off. People shouted after him. Not everything was complimentary. Not everything was true. Not everything was true today, but at the time, you know, when you're trying to make a statement, things were shouted at Petr Cech, and he switched. He was in the ground, right? He was gone. He turned around, he threw his briefcase on the floor and he stormed back to the fans and got into a thing. And he was basically, he wasn't polite himself, by the way, but he was basically asking people to go home, is what he was saying. And I was saying to him, among other people, I was saying, this is a disgrace. Where's your principle? The thing that you can hear me saying is, like, on the clip, is where's your principle, Petr? And he went in, and as a joke, I said to my mate, I said, oh, this will do it. He'll go and tell them all. And I think he did. Like, because then next thing you know, 20 minutes later, it was all over. And Harry, the scenes on the Fulham Road, when that news broke.
Yeah, that Chelsea were considering putting out.
Harry, whatever celebration in your lifetime at Arsenal, right, whatever that celebration is, maybe when Tony Adams scored against Everton,
That was whatever a moment where you just put your arms out and just take
whatever
it.
You're selling. No, but you know, for like you as a fan, right? Whenever you've gone most potty, don't know if it's Thierry Henry against Tottenham, whatever it is, right? That was the vibe. That it was European Cup levels. It was like people were celebrating on the street as if Chelsea had just won the European Cup for a record number of times or something like that. It was wild. You know, people are on this show. I'm too old for it, right? But, you know, when the beers are going everywhere, I'm thinking, oh, yeah, that's a few quid on clothes. I like clothes. What are you doing? Don't cover me in your Fosters. But yeah, it was crazy. It was a beautiful moment. It was actually one of my favourite Chelsea moments. It's up there. It's up there with winning the cup in Amsterdam. It's up there with winning the cup in Munich. It's up there with Wayne Bridge scoring against you. It's up there with that.
It was a special, special occasion. Let's go over to the live chat box. I want to say a big thank you to Inny for your very kind super chat. He says, I'm sorry, this is a bit disingenuous. Chelsea is in a better organizational state. You'll never be 100% appreciative of management decisions, but looking at the collective picture, it's been good. So I think, Inny, the important thing here is, like, I look at Chelsea and I say sometimes, you know, I wish we were run like that. I wish that ruthlessness was there. But of course, we don't have that inside knowledge of Chelsea. We don't have the full understanding of the bigger picture, I would say.
You know what, Harry? Do you know what I'd add to that as well? I think Inny is completely correct, right? But I wouldn't label it disingenuous. Like, Inny's correct that Chelsea have a better stable than Arsenal. That is completely and utterly correct. I don't think anybody would contest that with you or with Inny himself.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make it disingenuous for a Chelsea fan to not be happy with the way that the club is being run, simply because our club is being run better than yours.
Exactly.
There are certain decisions being made at Chelsea that are better than Arsenal. But whatever's going on at Arsenal, it doesn't mean that I can be happy with the way that Chelsea are going about their business with regard to the Super League, leaving Stamford Bridge, sacking Frank Lampard, whatever it is.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. I completely agree. I want to get your thoughts on Arsenal, Rory, because, you know, people that watch and listen to this show will have heard my thoughts over the last few weeks. It's been quite draining talking about it because it feels like we're in a position now where we're at our lowest point, the lowest point that I can remember as an Arsenal fan. You know, 25 years we've been in Europe and we're staring a campaign without European football in the face. You know, we could scrape into the Europa Conference, but who actually wants that? It's mad. But how are you looking at the Arsenal situation from the outside, as someone looking in? Because it really does feel like in the last few months, yes, we've been in a decline, you could argue, for a decade, but it really feels like that decline has accelerated.
Yeah, I think that the Villarreal, sorry to bring it up straight away, but I think that the Villarreal game is symbolic. It represents so much more than a semi-final defeat. Semi-final defeats happen, but there was so much in that. The way that you went out with a whimper, a 0-0 draw at home, having got a precious away goal that perhaps you didn't deserve anyway, you know, that's a different conversation, but it was a whimper. And the other thing that I thought was really symbolic was Unai Emery celebrating at the Emirates. I mean, that just shouldn't be happening. It was Arteta being conquered by his predecessor, a predecessor that was deemed not good enough. He was conquered by a team that isn't as good as Arsenal's team. He was conquered by a squad that isn't as good as Arsenal's squad. And I think that match, Arsenal's season being over with four games or three games left to play, is not good enough. And for me, I think if the theory that you have to hit rock bottom before you bounce back up, what Eminem sung about, right? If that's true, you should be fairly happy, because I think you've done it. Because I didn't see that. What are you? You're genuine. This isn't me mocking you either, Harry. You're genuinely in a tussle with Leeds for top half, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is, you know, that's a good point that you make about hitting rock bottom to bounce back up. You know, there is a kind of, I don't want to say an optimism, because I don't even feel that it is that strong, but there is a kind of feeling from myself anyway, that at least now the ownership will have no choice but to invest, but to try and do something, but to make some changes behind the scenes that will hopefully pick things up. That's kind of me trying to be optimistic and positive, but it is
you know, really the mad situation, right? This is, and again, I'm probably showing my age here. So anybody watching this, if you're if you're younger than me and approach football in a slightly different way, you probably won't even understand what I'm saying here. But I think that the Arsenal club that I knew growing up, right? I grew up in Northwest London. I'm from Kilburn. Arsenal were the club. Arsenal winning doubles twice when in my childhood, right? Traumatic. Arsenal always beating Chelsea, no matter what. Whether it was Silvino, Winterburn, Carnu, no matter what we did, we couldn't get one over on you. I would still say, are the biggest club in London. But something has changed. And it's over two decades since you won a league. I think that something massive has happened to Arsenal. And it's typified by this example. Arsenal, their season's over. They're out of all competitions. They're tussling with Leeds for top half finish, who are newly promoted. And the amazing thing is, there isn't like a genuine desperation. Some people have, and I think you were probably part of this. But how is the manager not being vilified here? How are Arsenal fans kind of fairly complacent now? I don't understand how Arsenal have got to this low point and they aren't desperate for a new manager. They aren't screaming for a new manager. And for me, that's almost a mindset. Have they accepted mediocrity? Have they normalized mediocrity?
I think there's a big divide at the moment. So there are a fair amount of Arsenal supporters now who want to see a change of management. For me, the Villarreal thing was the final straw. And I look at Mikel Arteta and I listen to him talk and I look at some of the, you know, I analyze the games and I look at some of the tactical tweaks he's tried to make and the way that at times he successfully leveled the playing field between Arsenal and some of the better sides. But I also was sort of banking on the fact that we would have at least reached the Europa League final. Because for me, Rory, if we went to the final and we got beaten by a superior Manchester United, you'd have come away from that obviously disappointed. You've just lost the European final. But you can kind of live with that. You can kind of accept that. What you can't accept, though, is the combination of being mid-table and being dumped out of the Europa League by a side, like you quite rightly said, who are nowhere near as good as us. And that might sound arrogant coming from an Arsenal fan, and it might sound rich coming from an Arsenal fan, given the struggles we've experienced this season. But Villarreal are not a good side. Unai Emery is not a good manager. It wasn't an Unai Emery masterclass against Arsenal. Arsenal simply failed to turn up. If anything, Unai Emery showed exactly why we got rid of him in the first leg when they were 2-0 up at half time and he shit the bed and subbed the striker off to bring on a defensive midfielder. That is Unai Emery. So that's all of those things now make it impossible to defend Mikel Arteta. I also appreciate, though, that this was a much bigger job than people thought when he took it over. He's had lots of different issues to deal with that, first of all, most managers probably wouldn't encounter during their career. There's been so much turmoil behind the scenes at Arsenal. But secondly, he doesn't have that experience to draw upon to, you know, to get him out of those difficult situations, to get him through those difficult moments. And so I want him to go now. I think it's time for a change. I think we're at the point now where he has to prove to us that he's worthy now, rather than us just blindly supporting him. But equally, I think it's naive to think that all of Arsenal's problems will disappear with a change of manager, because they are deep running issues and they've been seeping through the woodwork for years, and finally the wood has caved in.
But there are examples. Look, occasionally there are certain things that say no man can fix the entire structure of a club, right? But Chelsea are a good example of, if you pull, you know, Chelsea were around mid-table, going nowhere in any competitions really when Frank Lampard was manager. We're suddenly in the final of two and securely top four, touch wood. So a new manager does make a huge difference. And I think that, of course, we can, of course, you're right to look at how Kroenke's running your club. Of course, you're right to have conversations about where the funds are coming from. And of course, those things need to continue. But if you get the right man in charge, and I don't know who that is, by the way, I think Arsenal have made crucial mistakes in the past of not appointing the right man when the right man was available. I mean, Klopp felt very Arsenal to me back in the day.
Yeah.
So I think now you need to get it right. But what I can't understand is, there isn't a clamouring, or is there? Have I got it wrong now? Has the Villarreal result turned? Are people now genuinely asking for Arteta to go?
I would say the majority are now, but only after the Villarreal thing. I think it was split up until that point. And I think that people kind of hoped that Mikel Arteta, having won a cup last season, was going to pull a couple of results out of the bag and get us over the line. And look, let's have it right. You know, football obviously is fine margins. You know, Unai Emery was a point away from getting into the Champions League and he lost the Europa League final. He came very close to getting Arsenal back to where they hired him to bring us to. And then Mikel Arteta, had he won the Europa League, would have also achieved the season's objective of getting Arsenal back in the Champions League. But they're falling short. And ultimately, football is a results game. And I take your point on board about Chelsea and, you know, Thomas Tuchel coming in and turning things around. And he has. I guess the counter I would say to that is that Thomas Tuchel has a talented group of players from which he can pick from. He's got a better squad, a deeper squad, a stronger squad. Whereas Arsenal, for me, you know,
the squad isn't like 11th or 10th or wherever it is. Ultimately, you end up this season. And therefore it's underachievement on that spectrum. I think Arsenal should be somewhere between, I think if it had all gone really to plan, potentially fourth. If it had all gone normally, seventh. Like, look, you shouldn't be loitering below Tottenham when you think about the season that Tottenham have had.
And the fact they've had to sack a manager halfway through it.
And yeah, the fact that they've got a child in charge now, you know, like there's loads of reasons to say that whatever you want to put to back Arteta, whether the, you know, the players are good enough, whether the squad has enough depth, all of those things are again, legitimate conversations. But mate, I've seen there have been some really bad Arsenal performances this season.
Horrible.
And the other thing is, there have also been some really lucky performances, I've thought. So there are a few points on that board where I think you've been fairly lucky. Circumstance has got your way. I mean, like you've beaten both Chelsea and Manchester United this season, haven't you?
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? That could have been a very different story. And then suddenly you're 6 points less.
The thing is, though, I guess for me, where I've started to kind of lose my rag with Mikel Arteta has actually been the excuses. It's been the constantly coming out in front of the cameras and finding a reason as to why we lost the game or we didn't win a game, and this refusal to actually look at his team. And I'm not denying that he probably does that behind closed doors. And a lot of it is obviously, you know, the way he wants to talk to the media. He doesn't want to air their dirty laundry in public. I get all that. But there has to be a balance struck. And I think a more experienced manager knows how to kind of keep the fans on side a little bit more by showing that he's feeling the pain with them and understands the pain, but also is, you know, is protective of his players. I think in Arteta, you can see his face when he loses a game. You can see, you know, the glazed look. You know that he's upset. You know that he's disappointed. But then he points to things like, you know, the Europa League final. All he's been saying since the Europa League final is, well, if Aubameyang doesn't hit the post, we're through. If Aubameyang does, you know, it, 1 inch makes all the difference. But that's football. And what we should be focusing on and homing in on is the fact that Arsenal only managed 2 shots on target at home in a Europa League semi-final in a game that they desperately needed to win. That is the real problem and has been the problem all season. It's not that Aubameyang hit the post. And that's what drives me mad. I think a lot of people are starting to lose their rag with him, I think.
It's against very beatable opposition. You know, it's against, you're playing a team that are 7th in La Liga. That's a beatable team. Whatever spin Arteta puts on it, some of it may have some semblance of truth. But if you play the 7th best team in Spain and all you've got to do is beat them at home to get into a final, mate, you've got to beat them. I'd say, like, look, Chelsea played Seville in the Champions League, right? Seville are currently 4th in La Liga. They were in our Champions League group. We beat them 4-0 away from home. Olivier Giroud scored 4. They are currently 4 places above Villarreal.
Yeah. No, exactly.
They are 20 points better than Villarreal. That's who you're playing, you know. So Arteta knows that, yeah? Arteta knows who's where in La Liga. And it actually does him a disservice because I think it makes him look very flimsy. I think that he should actually come out, take it on the chin, admit he got it wrong, admit his team didn't turn up, and show a little bit more grit and determination. Because flagging, think, like, you know, when I play football, I talk like that. Like, I talk, oh, I've hit the post when I should have. I'm not a professional footballer, man. What are you doing? You can't use the same excuses as me. Yeah. You need to be more, like, you're a professional athlete, not finding excuses. Finding excuses is for what someone like I do when I play football. So I think that Arteta, I don't know, he seems to get a lot of love. He seems to get a lot of credit. I think a lot of it came from the fact that Pep Guardiola endorsement did him a massive favour, didn't it?
Huge, huge, absolutely. Big thank you to Jan Ostergaard for your kind super chat as well. It's a super sticker. I'll probably have to look actually on YouTube to see what it is. I will check that out in a minute, mate, because StreamYard, I think, just pulls through the super sticker words rather than the actual things. I will check that out. But thank you, mate, for your very kind donation. Guys, get your questions for Rory in the chat. And just a quick reminder while I wait for you to pop them in that this show is brought to you by Manscaped. So if you enter our discount code, which is 90min20, you'll get 20% off as well as free shipping.
The brand deals.
There you go. So check out manscaped.com. If your nether regions are in need of some tender loving care, look, lockdown's over now, so you might need to address that situation, then head over and check it out. Get your discount as well. It is worthwhile. Rory, there was a comment for you, which I'm just scrolling back to try and find. actually saying that they watch you on the kickoff. I'm just trying to find who it was. And they're disappointed there's no Arsenal representation, but they love the way that you're always having constructive discussion. Here it is, rather than just letting people talk rubbish about us. So there you go. Rory's there. Getting in the good books for the Arsenal fans.
I try and do my fair share of talking rubbish about Arsenal as well, to be totally frank. But no, I think, do you know what? That may actually be referring to a conversation that we had on the show the other day, which was ultimately, this was the question, Harry, I'll put it to you. If Chelsea win the Champions League,
yep,
and the significance that would go with that, do you think, I've always said to you and to anybody that would ever listen to me, Arsenal the biggest club in London. Arsenal are historically the biggest club in London. That has been set over what's happened over decades. However, the past 2 decades, Arsenal haven't won a trophy. Da, 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 da. If Chelsea were to win the European Cup for the second time, becoming London's only representative to win the European Cup once, let alone twice, the debate was, does the significance of that trophy potentially restructure the London landscape?
It depends on how you measure a big club. I think there's a difference between being a big club and the more successful club. I think that
the two are linked, though. Like, yeah, success and size go hand in hand.
They do. But I think that when you're talking about two clubs that didn't start on the same level playing field, if that, and I don't mean that disrespectfully to Chelsea, right, but Arsenal's fan base is the way it is because of years and years and years. And I would argue, I know some of the older Arsenal fans that listen or watch this won't like this, because a lot of them, you know, couldn't understand the kind of thing about, you know, Arsene Wenger taking Arsenal to a high level. He absolutely did. And he took Arsenal to a global scale at a time when the Premier League was becoming a global thing as well. I think that Chelsea, you know, you could make that case. I think you could make that case. But I do believe that the Arsenal fan base, particularly here in the UK, is a lot bigger. I think globally, though, Chelsea are catching up. And I notice this when I do some of the work that I do nowadays, because I seem to find that a lot of the Chelsea fans that are talking to us or that are in the comments or that are reacting are from overseas. So it's caught my eye that Chelsea's global presence is growing as well. But I'm still not at the point, Rory, where I want to say Chelsea are a bigger club.
You know what's quite funny, Harry? Neither am I. But what I did think was quite interesting. So you and I are Londoners and have a dog in the fight. And we've both agreed, actually. I don't think it will change. What I thought was quite interesting, the non-Londoners around the kickoff table and the non-Chelsea and Arsenal fans. A perfect example I can give you is Adam McCullough, who's a Manchester United fan. He said to me, for his perspective, Chelsea are already bigger. I don't agree with that. I'm just saying it's quite an interesting thing. What I would say is from my point of view, when I was a kid, Arsenal were there and Chelsea were there. Chelsea had gone 25 years without a trophy, right? Ever since, I'd say post-97, Chelsea became more relevant. You know, Arsenal winning doubles, don't get me wrong, but Chelsea became more relevant. Then post-04, when Wayne Bridge scored at Highbury, I think it's started to do this. Arsenal have started to come down. Chelsea have started to go up. The European Cup in 2012 helped level it. Baku, for me, was very significant. Walloping you in a final in Europe, planting our flag in European soil. Again, Arsenal's history in Europe is pitiful.
Yep, agreed. Don't disagree with that.
Yeah, and I think the fact that we did it once, the fact that we beat you in Baku, if we were to then win another European Cup, where what started like this, it certainly suddenly becomes this.
Yeah, it's certainly levelling out. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that.
It's an interesting one, but I would... I don't know if I'm old-fashioned, and I put so much faith in... I always look back at football. You know, I know far more about 95, 96 than I do who played for Chelsea last weekend, to be frank. So I don't know if I always view Arsenal through the prism of the glorious teams. Exactly. But I think that it's definitely becoming closer. And another European Cup, I'm not saying it changes it, because I don't think it does, but my gosh, it suddenly becomes a really serious conversation. One that we do a video on, Harry, like a genuine, the title of the video is, are Chelsea now the biggest club in London?
As you say, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree that you certainly need to have that discussion at that point for sure. The gap is definitely closing. Maybe has already completely closed, depending on what side of the fence
you'll be supporting Man City in the final?
I'm in two minds here, Rory, because on the one hand, I've got this thing about not wanting more British clubs to win the Champions League before we do. And right. Manchester City winning it adds another team to that list. But equally, I don't have that rivalry as an Arsenal fan with Manchester City that I do with Chelsea. So
you're like, I can't. So that's exactly what I'm like. You know, when other clubs are going for the league, I don't like or any trophy. I always like to keep the winners pool as small as possible.
Small as possible.
Yeah, exactly. Make it as elite as possible. Yeah, because you know what? Do you know what I saw? You know the Cup Winners' Cup, right? So Chelsea won the. This is what I find amazing about Arsenal. Arsenal in England, obviously huge, like records in trophies, FA Cups, whatever, FA Cups titles, huge. But Europe's bad. Do you know? You know the Cup Winners' Cup, right? Which once was a really established, like people will dismiss it, but it was massive, right? And you know, in like Chelsea won it in 71. I think we were the second London club to win it. You know, Arsenal were the fourth. You know, like in terms of keeping it smaller, it took Arsenal won that trophy ultimately behind Chelsea, Tottenham, and West Ham. You think that's not in keeping with the size and structure that I know Arsenal to be. Arsenal in Europe, it just doesn't add up, does it?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. And I think when you look back at, you know, Arsene Wenger's Arsenal career has some absolute highlights that will live with us forever. There were some low points as well, but overall, you have to say, Wayne Bridge being one of them. Overall, you have to say Arsene Wenger was great for Arsenal Football Club. But the one sort of black mark against his name is Europe. You know, we made the Champions League final once. We lost it. We made the UEFA Cup final in 2000. We were beaten by Galatasaray in the final. So that is where he falls short.
Hey, Harry, do you know what, right? Only the OGs watching will remember this. When I was really young, there was a chance. Chelsea and Arsenal were both in the semi-final. You were holders. You beat Parma, I think, the year before.
94.
So you beat Parma. So you were the holders of the Cup. The Cup Winners' Cup. You're in it again, obviously, as holders. Chelsea were in it because Manchester United won the league and they beat us in the cup final. So we were in the cup winners' cup. If Chelsea had beaten Zaragoza, it was going to be a Chelsea-Arsenal final for you to retain it. And then Naeem scored. But that could have done you a favour. You know, in terms of your Arsenal European record, retaining that trophy in 90, it would have been what, 95, 96? That would have been, would it have been 95, 96 or 94, 95?
Off the 94, top of my head. 94, 95, I think. Yeah, 93, 94.
That would have been a good thing. But mate, imagine if that had come off. Chelsea would have played Arsenal in a final in the 90s. That would have been amazing, man. Yeah, Gavin Peacock versus Anders Limpar.
Some of the younger listeners probably like, well, look at these old men reminiscing about the old days.
That's what I'm definitely becoming, man. I'm definitely becoming that bloke.
That's it, exactly. I do it all the time. I say to people, do you remember this player? No. Yeah. What do you mean you don't remember him? He was class. Right. Yeah.
I always did that. Especially, weirdly, with Arsenal as well. Like, you know that Arsenal team when I was a kid? It was so memorable. Limpar and Merson and Campbell. And it was a good, it was a really like memorable team. And then I always start doing it like years later. Like, I start talking to people about like Fran Mareda or something like that. People are like,
that is a name from the past. It is indeed. Let's go over to some questions. Let's squeeze some questions in before we wrap it up. Sam, one of our members, big hello to Sam. He says, will Chelsea play their strongest 11 with the FA Cup final coming up on the weekend? Respect, Rory. You're one of the few non-Arsenal fans' opinions I respect. What do you make of it? Tuchel likely to rotate? Because, you know, he rotated against Manchester City last weekend. So what does that mean for us?
There are certain people that like need to be protected. Thiago Silva is an obvious one. Thiago Silva will be protected and wrapped in cotton wool, and only we will only see the light of day when it is essential. because he's essential to everything that we do. So we need him on fighting form. But no, I think Chelsea go strong against Arsenal. I think Chelsea go really strong, almost as strong as we can. 90% strong, I'd say. If anyone's got a knock, obviously they don't play. If anyone's a bit knackered, obviously they won't play. But no, you can expect to see a team full of familiar faces. Like maybe Azpilicueta will have a rest, but that will be Reece James in there. So it's not like it's going to be any easier, because I think a lot of our second string are pushing for first choice anyway. I mean, I imagine Marcus Alonso will probably play instead of Chilwell. But Marcus Alonso is a good, in my opinion, at least. He's not overly popular. But look, he scored, what am I talking about? He scored the winner against Man City.
Exactly, yeah. He's one of those players, Marcus Alonso, that I think gets a lot of heat, and it's not always warranted. Like, we know he's not the greatest defender in the world, but he does give you so much in that wing-back position.
The problem for him is he's a footballer. He's a glorious footballer, right? You know his touch, his control, the way that he can ping in across, all of that. He's really good. His eye for a goal is up there with some of the best of the club. Like, he really does have a keen eye for a goal. But he's just slow. He's, like, really slow. And he's just not a good defender. But there isn't really a position for him because he's so slow he can't play as a winger. He's not a very good defender, so he can't really play as a fullback. But in terms of his on-the-ball qualities, he's fantastic. But he's on football. But I like him. And he's good for a goal. He's good for a goal in massive games. In fact, he scored the winner against you. Do you remember that? Was it first game of the season? First home game of the season?
Early in the season, wasn't it? With the header. When he rose to win the header at the far post, wasn't it?
I think he flicked it. Didn't he flick it through the keeper's legs? I think we beat you 3-2 really early in the season. Like, second game. And
This was a few seasons ago, right?
Yeah, maybe two seasons ago. Someone in the comment. Have you got the comments open? Someone will know this.
Yeah,
Marcus scored, flicked it through the keeper's legs at the near post. But someone will tell us.
I'm trying to recall it. I can't remember when.
I imagine it will be. Yeah, it was Chelsea's first home game of the season under Frank Lampard. Under Frank Lampard, I think.
So I'm thinking of the one in
Sarri. Sarri.
The one I was thinking of was, remember when he rose up and he hit into Bellerin and we were all up in arms that it was a foul.
That's right.
At Stamford Bridge. That's right. And he jumped up at the far post.
He did. Yes, he did.
That's the one that's coming to mind.
Also, you'll appreciate this. Another reason why I love Marcus Alonso so much. We played Tottenham, right? The year it was their first home game when their home was Wembley. So again, it was like in August. It was the first game. We'd lost in the first game of the season, like a ridiculous loss to someone stupid. I can't remember who it was, but to someone stupid in like a bad way. We then went to Tottenham. Tottenham had nearly won the league the previous year. They're playing at Wembley. This is their season again. Mate. He scored two goals, including like an 87th minute winner. He scored both goals. Like, that's folklore stuff, isn't it? Tottenham are going to win the league. Tottenham, welcome to Wembley. Marcus Alonso, 2-1, unlucky.
Exactly. Let me bring you up this one from RJ. He says, for Rory, are Chelsea fans genuinely concerned about any Arsenal players looking at our lack of form? Perhaps Martinelli considering his goal at the Bridge previously. I'm sure Rory's not losing sleep over Arsenal coming up. You've got bigger fish to fry.
To be honest, RJ, in as polite way as I can say, and I don't mean this to sound arrogant or conceited, I'm not really... Before I tell you what I'm about to say, I would say the same thing before Chelsea play Man City. So it's not really an Arsenal thing. But I'm so confident in the way that Chelsea line up at the moment. I'm so confident in the way that Chelsea play. I'm not really going to be too preoccupied by Arsenal. The only thing I will say, I think serendipity in football is a thing, right? Willian scored a blinder against West Brom. I know you're not going to agree with me here. You know where I'm going with this, though, Harry, right?
Willian.
He's a terrible footballer. I know, terrible. But he does have a good goal in him and he does have a good performance in him. And it's due, isn't it? I mean, it's got to come at some point for Arsenal. So there is a slight concern in me that Willian turns up. But no, I'm not too preoccupied by Arsenal, really, Arjit. But I am impressed with your youngsters. I am impressed with the likes of Smith Rowe and Saka. I just think they've been thrown in the deep end and you're focusing on how good they are because you haven't really got... Like, we shouldn't be talking about Smith Rowe this year, really. Like, we shouldn't be.
That's right.
You remember, do you know who made the comparison was made to me the other day on the kickoff by Adam McConnell? He was like, look, Raw, when we were terrible, because I was saying how good I thought Smith Rowe and Saka were. Adam was like, look, Raw, when we were terrible under Moyes, we were all singing about Januzaj. Januzaj was the boy. And he's like, we shouldn't have known who Januzaj was. It's just nobody else was doing it. So we focused on the kid and you give the kid so much slack that you think he's wicked.
Yeah.
There's a truth in that, isn't there?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. 100%. I'll pull up the last question. This one comes from Ram. He says, seeing the massive impressive loan spell of Tomori at Milan, would you take him back or sell him to Milan? Now, as far as I understand it, Milan have an option to buy Fikayo Tomori for a set price, which I think is around about £25 million, if I'm not mistaken. Tomori's done okay at Milan. I wouldn't say he's been amazing. So where do you stand on him, Rory? Would you take him back or do you think that ship has sailed now?
Well, do you know what, Harry? Under Frank Lampard, he was the jewel in the crown. He really was. He was amazing. And suddenly something happened. And I have no inside knowledge on this, sadly. I'd love to know. If anyone does know, let me know. But I feel like there must have been a falling out. You know, Jody Morris, Frank Lampard was so supportive of Tomori. Tomori was at Derby with him. And then all of a sudden, he's gone. And he was the best defender at the club at the time as well. It just didn't make much sense. So that was really hard to kind of piece together. I would love to see him back at the club. But it's hard to make that judgment without knowing why he left.
Yeah, that's a great point.
I don't think he left for footballing reasons because he was the best defender at the club, playing in the best form he's ever played in. So I don't really know why he left. But look, I always have a soft spot for anyone that's come in straight out of Cobham. I have a real soft spot for. So yeah, of course. Mate, when we were singing about Tomori, Tammy Abraham, Billy Gilmore, Mason Mount, that's what I'm always going to want that. But yeah, I think you can do a job for Chelsea as well, for sure.
For sure. I'll pick up one more from following. I love it. Apparently, following Balligan's watching the show. Thank you. But he's got Martinelli as his picture. But thank you for your kind super chat, mate. He says, football is not played on paper, but could Tuchel's style of play, the back three and playing with wing backs, unleash Arsenal's attack? Do we have a chance? From an Arsenal perspective, I actually think that what Thomas Tuchel's Chelsea side do very well is they suffocate games of football. And they make it very, very difficult for you to get in behind them, even when they don't have the majority of possession. You know, like that first half against Manchester City, City did very little with it. You know, they did really little with it. And obviously that goal came at the end of the first period, which kind of opened the game up a little bit. But I don't expect Tuchel's side to give us any joy in terms of getting in behind, in terms of creating spaces, in terms of creating chances. We can't create chances against Villarreal, against Burnley, against bloody West Bromwich Albion. So I'm not particularly confident about that. Have you seen sort of Tuchel's system cause you any problems, Rory? I think it's worked pretty well.
No, it's worked brilliantly. The only people that will have a problem with it, and they do exist, I'm not in this camp. People who want football to be entertaining will have a problem with it. Because there are times where it's fairly dry, fairly stale. But Harry, I'm not that. I find winning entertaining. My entertainment comes from winning trophies, winning football matches. So I don't need to go to football and be entertained. If I want that, I'll go to the cinema. That's not me. But I think some people now, they pay so much money for their season ticket that they view it as a night at the theatre and they want to be entertained. That's not Thomas Tuchel. So some people may have an issue with the system, but I couldn't be further away from that.
Yeah, no, I think so. I think so too. I think it's all about winning. And if you're winning, you're always happy. And if you're always happy, then what more do you bloody want? But exactly. There we go. Right, we're going to leave it there. Rory, thank you so much, mate. I know you're super busy, so I appreciate you giving up so much time.
Oh, mate, it's been really an honour. Thank you for having me on, mate.
How can people check out your channel? Because it's going really well. It's brilliant content. Get over to Rory's channel. Where can they find it, mate?
Mate, it's just Rory Jennings on YouTube. Thank you so much.
No problem. It is in the description as well. So if you click on that link, it will take you straight over to Rory's channel. Make sure you subscribe to it. Make sure you hit the like button on this video if you haven't done it already. I haven't looked at the likes today while we're live, so I'm counting on you guys to hit that like button. It really
does. That was your first request for likes, Harry. You got to do that. You got to do that. I've been told you got to do that throughout.
I know. I've got. I went through a phase, right, where I was really like focusing on it, and I was really pushing the likes, and I did find that they were increasing, and therefore the views were increasing, and the subscribers were increasing. But I get to a point where I feel like I can't keep saying it. Like I'm annoying people by saying it all the time. So I need to break through that barrier. And
well, I was told, sure. Harry, here's a tip for you. I've no idea if this is true, but I try it and it seems to work. I was told to set a like target. So before the video starts and at various points throughout the video, you go, can we get to 200 likes? Can you help me? Or can you help me get to 100 likes or something like that? You go, can we get to 100 likes? There's 200 of you watching. We've got 50 likes. I just need some of you to like it and we'll see if we can get there. But apparently that's the move. So just ask for a target. Can we get to 100 likes, for example?
There we go. We'll do that going forward. Big thank you to Jan, who's just signed up to become a member of the channel as well. Jan, make sure you click in the community tab, get the link to our private Discord server. Come and jump in. There's loads of Arsenal conversation going on in there with some great people throughout the day. Right, we're going to leave it there. I'll catch you all later on tonight. Come and join me tonight live at 9 p.m. with former Arsenal man and the club's official analyst, Adrian Clark. He is joining me at 9 p.m. to talk about everything that's going on at Arsenal right now. It's been a few weeks since Adrian's been on. I know lots of you've been asking me in the comments to get him back on, and we've managed to do it. So I'll be talking to Adrian tonight, so make sure you check that one out. Until next time, take care of yourselves and catch you all soon. Ciao.
You're listening to the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast.
I'm Martin Tyler, and you're listening to Harry Simeon.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.